Hi everyone, welcome to the May Search Engine News Masterclass presentation. We've got an exceptional presentation planned for you today. I'm pleased to introduce to you two really competent marketers we have today. We have James Loomstein and Chip Rosales. They're both managing partners for Rogue Marketing. And you can kind of see on the slide here, we're going to talk today about how to find, build, and engage audiences that convert. You might have seen the session focus, but if you didn't, the point of today's presentation is to kind of provide a process and modern framework for identifying and validating what are called the right target audiences. Both Chip and James are going to talk fundamentally about how you can use digital marketing to understand not only importance, but also the why behind the channels and platform they use, both at Rogue and other professionals use, to amplify marketing channels. Just to give you a brief introduction on who you're going to be hearing from today, James is the managing partner. James has 15 years of experience in strategic planning, digital marketing, and consumer insights. Besides being an adjunct professor at SMU Cox School of Business in Dallas, James is also a member of the board for DFW SEM, which is one of the largest and oldest digital marketing associations in the U.S. He's also in charge of their acclaimed State of Search Conference, which fortunately I've had the honor of presenting at the last 2 years, and we're extremely fortunate to have him as an invited speaker today. Joining him on the call is his also managing partner, Chip Rosales. Chip is a expert on the topic of influencer marketing and amplification strategies. I was just commenting to Chip that he had a great article on Momentology, which covers kind of this current election cycle and proving to be an incredible case study in influencer marketing. So I'm going to paste that over for you to review in a little bit. But Chip has over 20 years of marketing experience and has basically done it all at the corporate level in marketing. So I know they both are going to bring their A game today in this presentation. So as always, you know how these calls work. Both Chip and James will do their presentation. During the interim, make sure you take good notes. And of course, also go ahead and include any questions that you might want to have answers to or any points for clarification in the Q&A box. And we'll get to those after the call. So without any further ado, James, Chip, welcome. Let's get
going. Thanks for having us. We really appreciate it. So this is Chip Rosales. It's great to be here this afternoon. We like to start off all our presentations with a question. So there we go. So the first question I think we have for you is, are you completely satisfied with the position you are holding in the mind of your client? Today's conversation is going to be more than just tips and tricks that can make you more effective. We want to talk about how do we make ourselves sticky, valuable? How do you expand your piece of the universe? Now, I know I'm talking to a lot of the go-getters out there, and I know that because you're on this call. You're taking the time, you're investing time and increasing your skill set, and you're certainly the kind of people who can get the job done. But today, I think what we want to talk about is what can you do that will make the job that you are doing and the results that you are achieving indispensable? Why is it sometimes that just doing a good job isn't enough? We wanted to take a minute before we kind of jump into our topic of finding, building, and engaging audiences that convert to tell you a little bit more about Rogue Marketing. Just make sure, Casey set us up very nicely about who you are, who we are, and the kinds of experience that we bring. Rogue itself is a digital strategy agency. We spend a lot of time talking with growth-oriented companies about how we can build their brands, how we can amplify channels, and how we can minimize their risk. And that's really important for those growth-oriented channels growth-oriented companies because they have big outcomes that they're trying to achieve, and they have to do that on fairly fast timetables. I imagine that's the kind of client that you two are serving. So we spend a lot of time building the brand. We try to look at data, make sure that we're saying the right things to drive awareness. We also spend a lot of time amplifying channels. This is about us understanding what channels to use and when. This is a lot about the integration component of what we as marketers do. And today's topic really about audience finding and building and engaging, this is the kind of thing that happens in our amplify channel segment of what Rogue brings to the table. And then ultimately, we work to minimize risk. It's very easy for a company to go in and hire IBM. You've heard that old adage, nobody gets fired for hiring IBM. Well, what we want to be is as safe of a bet for clients as well. We want to help them invest at the best levels to achieve their desired outcomes. And we want to make sure that we're using data and optimization and analytics to be able to express to them how we're helping them to achieve the results and the outcomes that they're looking for. So today's conversation, you're going to actually hear a little bit of all of these topics. You're going to hear about how you build brand and how you amplify channels and how that ultimately minimizes risk. And that nice mix is what we're going for. So today, you've got myself over there on the right-hand side, and you've got James Lundstein over here on the left. We've been around since 2009. We've got a small agency. We're an agency of 10, and we're located in a number of places. We serve a variety of industries. A little bit more about James. He's definitely comes from that consulting Omnicom agency background. So think all those big agencies that many of you may have also been a part of. He's a marketing owner. He's a speaker. At the end of the day, what he's emphasizing is strategy and outcomes over tactics. And then you've got myself, and Casey mentioned a few of the things that I've had the opportunity to do. What's interesting, or what I find interesting, is really about emphasizing story, understanding how to integrate all those marketing elements together to help companies stand out, and then make the technologies that we're all using and that we're all practicing on, how do we make those work harder? So today, you're going to hear from some individuals who serve with a lot of growth-oriented companies as effectively outsourced CMOs, and hopefully what you'll hear is a nice mix of message and science, where you'll see us emphasize outcomes and integration even more than just tactics. Another thing is we hope that you're going to find in our brief time together that we're going to provide you with some valuable insights and some valuable information. And what we want to do is pick up some approaches that you can, we want you to be able to pick up some approaches that you can replicate and use to serve your internal and external clients more strategically and for a longer period of time. The kinds of things that we traditionally get the opportunity to talk about is, social media and entrepreneurship, automation, how do you build that brand, influencer marketing, as Casey mentioned earlier, technology and tools. And a lot of times it's about how do you grow your business and how do you integrate all of marketing to work harder for you. So with that quick setup, what we want to do is actually kick this thing off. So here we go. Today, we are going to talk about how you find the ideal target audience, how you identify the right buying moment, how you can optimize for growth, how all those elements work together to impact your business, your brand, your agency. We're going to give you some resources. We'll have an opportunity for Q&A, and I think you'll have an opportunity to have this presentation at a later date, but here we've given you a lot of our contact information, so if you'd like to follow us along, follow us at RogueThink, at Jay Lundstein, and at Chip Rosales, along with, of course, you probably already are, at MediaWise and at Planet Ocean. So these are some Twitter accounts that you might want to follow along and keep up with all sorts of good ideas. All right. So you probably know this, but there are over a billion websites. There are more than 2 million blog posts that were just published today. There have been more than 468 million tweets given today. And all of this adds up to this idea that today's consumer has unlimited choice. They've got so many opportunities to get messages across. They've got access to information as they've never had before. And, it's hard to be all things to all people, which is why we want to spend a lot of time today helping you get to a targeted audience. And that's why we've picked that as our topic today. Because in the end, the number one problem that you are probably facing is obscurity. With that amount of information that's out there, it's hard to stand out. You also have a race against time and capital, and it's impossible to outspend the mass market. Because of all of that, we wanted to really spend a lot of time talking today about target audience.
Right. So thanks, Chip. Right. So can I go? So that's it. So this is James. And so when we talk about finding and building and engaging audiences, I think it's important in understanding and knowing about the reality of problems of the number one problem we face is obscurity and our race against time and capital, and that we can't be all things to all people, and that we really start to center down on what is our goal. And so if it's you the agency, or you the consultant, or you the brand, or you the solo entrepreneur, who is that target audience and what it is that you want them to do? So if your goal is customer acquisition, or your goal is leads, or your goal is new users versus returning users, whatever that path is that you want people to do in your Google Analytics, or what you want them to accomplish on your website, that is what you need to tie your strategies and tactics to those actual outcomes. So the email signups, the page views, the times on site. Similarly, when it goes after keywords you go after or content that you're writing, I think it's important that we're looking at audience platform and that tactic versus what's popular, or we're looking at relevancy and what's relevant to our audience versus keyword search volume. So something that gets 100 searches might be more impactful to your audience versus something that gets 10,000 searches, because that's what's important to your specific audiences. So how to find and build and engage with your audience that converts is actually what's more important to your audience rather than what's most important to everybody. So goal identification is the most important thing, and tying those to specific outcomes, and then tying the goals to the data. So, and if you were to put that into a process, starting at the very high level of the attributes of your target, so their demographic attributes, the psychographic attributes, the behavior attributes, and then obviously, you know, things like their search attributes. I don't think anything does that better than Facebook targeting. I think second to that, using Google Analytics, that might be able to help you, or SEO, webmaster traffic, to be able to tell you what search queries people are doing. Using those attributes to tie into goal identification is the easiest thing that people can be doing. So starting with your keyword research, AdWords, SEMrush, SEO query data. Taking that information, tying to a specific type of persona, which we'll get into here in a minute, and then tying those into social media behavior characteristics. So the demographic tied to psychographic and behavioral characteristics, I think, are probably the easiest ways to start being able to tie to audiences that find, build, engage, and ultimately convert. One of the easiest ways, if you work in an industry or with a brand or you're a company that has a high level of social or over-indexes for social, I think follower want is probably is a great tool for that. It's the pay tool of Moz. The ability to go in, find profiles, connect with people by headline and by location, and be able to find a subset of your target audience. So go in and find 5, 10, 15 people that are the characteristics of your target audience, find their demographics, psychographics, behavioral, where they live, what they're into, et cetera, and then map those people out into a persona, which we'll talk about, into what are their profiles, into what are their searches, where they hang out online, et cetera, and then turn that into a journey mapping exercise, which we'll talk about, and into a persona to see how they actually convert further down in the conversion funnel. But I think the biggest takeaway from this is tying actions to outcomes and not being all things to all people, and making sure that your site or your goal for a particular campaign is tied to something specific. So whether it's the customer acquisition or the lead or new user versus returning user, or a page view, or increasing time on site, or just getting more email signups. So if I was to take that just one step further, some people, when they sit there and look at their target audience, they'll say, my audience is women 23 to 55, or my audience is anyone that drives a car, or my audience is for anyone with a face. And the reality is, that's not your audience, because You can't be all things to all people. You can't be, and you can't outspend mass market, and you can't be on every single channel that's out there, and you can't compete with Walmart, and you can't compete with P&G, and you can't compete with Best Buy, and you can't be on every page of Amazon. And so the more narrowed and the more focused you can be with an audience, and the more tactical you can be with an outcome you're looking for your audience to take, whether it's, I want them to sign up for my lead form, I want to increase their time on site, I want to have more returning users, I want them to sign up for the email, etc. The more you can tie those two things together, the further you can start amplifying and converting on your specific goal. So what that actually looks like is this. If you were to take an example, and this would be a real-world example, say you sell coaching services and you're in the professional services game. You might say, we sell professional coaching services to men 35 to 50 years old who make over $150,000 a year. Well, that would be basically everybody who works. In actuality, you might end up coming back and saying, we actually sell to females who have a psychographic characteristic of career seekers, who are more narrowed in focus of age, who more narrow focused in household income, and then more narrow focused in commercial real estate. And then what that actually allows you to do is by narrowing the focus of industry or narrowing the focus of behavioral characteristic or psychographic characteristic, so career seeker being psychographic characteristic, or household income demographics, allows you to tie that target audience to that outcome and allows you to have a higher level of conversion on the action you want them to take with your specific marketing channel. So as a case in point example, in a real estate client that we had was a company that is trying to drive leads through social. So their market is the Hispanic market who's looking to buy houses between $90,000 and $120,000 for the household purchase. And they were targeting mobile users, apartment renters, household income, $50,000 plus. In actuality, it ended up being that we wanted Spanish dominant users, high mobile propensity, followers of specific brands, high over-index for family, over-index for apartment users, and have a higher household income. So the more we focused on Spanish dominant in our targeting, the more we focused on audience behavior traits, the higher the quality of our leads and the higher our conversions became. And so if you were actually to take one of our reports that came out and compared January to February to March, you would see that from January to February that our clicks started to go down. Actually, they cut in half, that our sessions cut in half. But if you were to go to March, our conversions started to dramatically increase. So if you were to look in January, we had 6,000 clicks and 68 conversions. And then in March, we had 4,000 clicks, but 102 conversions. And so the more focused we became on demographic targeting, but more importantly, the more focused we became on the behavioral characteristics of our target audience, and the more focused that we became on tying those people to a specific outcome on the page, which was returning users, email signups, and time on site, the more that impacted our overall conversions. And so to the client, they were just interested in how much clicks could we get, how much reach could we get. We were more interested in the demographics and the behavior that we were able to target and how we were actually able to engage our audience. And that actually came from behavioral demographics targeting. And one of the biggest outcomes we got for that was through Facebook ads. So one of the things that allowed us to do this, and really what allows agencies and consultants and brands to do this, is through a process of validation and verification. So what I recommend and what we recommend as a company is just simple survey analysis. So what I mentioned earlier, which was around just taking a small subset of people, finding 5, 10, 15, 20 people who match the target market of your criteria. So going into follower wonk, or finding 20 people in your target audience, asking them, hey, what social sites are you on? Write those down. What search queries do you do to solve this problem? What websites do you find most of your information on? Finding 5, 6, 7 questions of the search queries they do, the social platforms they're on, the websites they hang out on. Putting those in a Google form or a SurveyMonkey, number one, and then going out on Twitter and asking people who have similar characteristics, maybe going on follower wonk, finding similar characteristics and saying, hey, would you take my survey? And then matching up those survey results of the new people to your control group and saying, hey, do the survey results, do the people that I asked, do they go to the same websites that my control group goes to? Do they use the same search queries that my control group asks? Are they on the same social platforms? Because if so, then I can start to actually scale that out and create content for those search queries, or advertise more on those search queries. Or maybe they'll actually tell you new search queries you didn't think of, or new social platforms you didn't think of, or new advertising opportunities that you didn't think of. Another one is a tool like CrowdVibe, which is an audience of 50 million people that you could actually go on to, have your list of questions, and use their audience to replicate out and ask their audience, hey, do you go on these websites? Do you do these search queries? Do you participate in these forums? Do you seek this type of information? You know, where do you go? And see if it validates what your control audience is actually doing. And so by doing these types of tools, this is what allows you to create personas, be able to scale, and actually lead to a higher level of conversion without having to sacrifice a high level of clicks and impressions, and be able to control your budget and grow your audience, and also be able to grow your level of engagement. So when we build these out and scale, like most of you probably do, is work around personas. So our personas are largely dependent on several criteria. One's around sites and apps that people use, around their public life, around brands that they follow and engage with, so we can replicate and scale those out, the demographic attributes of our target persona, what they want to actually accomplish, what their digital life looks like, and then what's the emotionality of those people. So what problems are they trying to solve? What keeps them up at night? And then what process are they going through to solve that problem? So what is that journey that Ruth is on? Or what is that journey that Joey is on to solve that problem? And then what steps are they going through? What queries are they entering? What social platforms are they on? So they're eventually going to end up at our website, our web page, our social platform, our brand X to solve that problem.
All right, so now we've got an idea. We've got an idea of who our target audience is, and we've talked about how we tested our way into that and how we validated those assumptions. But audiences do different things, and they need different things at different points in time. So what we want to talk about now is what we call journey moments. And what we at Rove spend a lot of time doing is we talk with a lot of companies about customer journey. you might do the same thing. One thing that we've learned is that you can have a room of 10 people and you can talk to every one of them, and every one of them has a good idea of what the customer journey is. If you were to talk to each of them individually and ask them what the customer journey looks like, they can draw it out, they can have a conversation with you, they can talk about what that customer journey looks like. But every one of those 10 people is going to have a different take on that customer journey. And the thing that we've found is that they're all right. Everyone's perspective in that room is different, but they're all right. And we think that this is because those that journey is based on micro moments. And you can see some of the stats that are on here. You can see about 91% of people using their phones in the middle of a task. If you have a teenager or a kid, you know that to be true. But even if you sit in meetings or have conversations, maybe even right now, you might be on your phone. Even as you're listening to this particular conversation, you may be on your phone looking at other things while you're in the middle of a task. If you go to the store, I know I do this all the time, 82% of people will turn to their phones for consultation in the middle of an in-store purchase. You just want to make sure that you're doing the right thing and you've got reviews and you've had a chance to really think through this purchase. You might be looking at a variety of companies. You might think you have a company in mind and actually end up purchasing from one you hadn't intended on purchasing. And one of these interesting, very interesting statistics is that 90% of people are not absolutely certain of the specific brand they actually want to buy when they begin looking for information online. Google calls this micro moments, and so you can see some information over here on the side. But here, at the end of the day, what we're looking at is you have opportunities of people who want to know things, people who want to go somewhere, people who want to do something, and people who want to buy. What we've seen is if you want to know something, you may be exploring, you're researching stuff. You're looking for that useful information that can help you know something in a better way. Sometimes you're actually ready to go. I need to try this out. I want to look at it. I want to touch it. I want to feel it. And you need to go to a local physical place to do that. At those particular points in time, you need different kind of information because you want to go and you want to experience something. Those I want to do moments. These are the things you're doing online when you're actually seeking out instruction for something, how to use something, how to do something. These are the I want to do moments. And then ultimately, the moment we all live for is the I want to buy moment. These are big. These are the moments. This is when you have that opportunity to actually make a purchase. And you need to be there at the right time with the right amount of information to seal that deal. Our point here, though, is that you have to place yourself at all stages of the funnel. So often what we do is we place ourselves either at the top or we more commonly find ourselves all at the bottom of the funnel here. And so you see over on the right-hand side, we've got top of the funnel, middle of the funnel, and bottom of the funnel. So maybe you spend time on blogging and social and you're doing SEO tactics in order to get visitors to come to your website. How are you spending time in the converting them once they visited? And ultimately, how are you then nurturing all of that? And how are you using the data to make better, more informed decisions? Where are you actually sitting in the bottom of the funnel? And our recommendation would be, and our admonition might be, that you find opportunities to be in all areas of that funnel.
And this is where I think the magic of, for brands and companies and small businesses and agencies and solopreneurs and the lawn company and the beauty salon and the banker and whoever, this is where I think their magic moment is. And if I was to go back a single slide, I think that middle of the funnel moment and the difference between I want to know and I want to buy moments is that's where I think the real opportunity is for brands today. And so it used to be that when people wanted to, the difference between on the conversion funnel of awareness to advocacy was they needed, companies and consumers just needed to be aware of a product, and then they went to the yellow pages and they looked up the product and then they bought something. And now this enormity of consideration phase is out there. And so if you were to go back one more slide and look at the vast majority of consumers who look for relevant information regardless of the company that's providing it, or the number of consumers who are so indecisive at that moment of purchase that they turn to their phone for consultations during an in-store purchase, or look at their phone in the middle of a task, or not really certain about the brand when they start down the path of conversion. Those are the moments of opportunity for small businesses, mid-sized businesses, and even global brands who might have product extensions or new products coming to market, or just the ability to drive more awareness and more consideration on the path to purchase. And so if we were to talk through just that part for you, or just that path towards how can we help to find, build, and engage in audiences that convert, and tie those moments to specific goals and outcomes, that is a moment of opportunity that exists out in the market today. So identifying the audiences within audiences is number one. And then number two is identifying those moments within those micro moments, and then finding those places between the top of the funnel and the bottom of the funnel, and then creating that content that helps drive them from awareness to advocacy. So from awareness to consideration to purchase to loyalty to advocacy along that journey path. So what something like that might look like is this. So if you were to go out and create your content, whether that content was a press release or an ebook or a case study or a webinar or a guide or a price calculator or whatever it was, you could probably put your content into one of these four areas around to entertain, educate, persuade, or convert. This information is from Distilled, and they actually do a bigger, deeper dive on this, but from a framework standpoint, this is the way it sets up. And then if you were to look at how you would position this content from awareness to purchase at the top, and then what sort of connection you were trying to make from emotional to rational. And so as you start to create this content, are you trying to drive an emotional connection that is around awareness, or are you trying to convert somebody and also educate them at the same time? So educational conversion content might be your interactive calculator. Educational and rational might be your webinar that exists in your B2B space. Trying to be emotional and drive awareness might be your viral video game, or purchase and emotional might be your customer reviews and endorsements. But trying to find out the type of content you want to do, and then on what level you want to create that content, is step number one. And then as we get further down this framework, about where in the customer journey it is that you're actually trying to connect with somebody at on that path from awareness to advocacy. So what that might look like is this. If you were in the mortgage loans business, or the B2B business, or you're in the lead gen business, or it actually doesn't really matter business, and your focus should now be on creating a deeper level. So yesterday, you might have said to your client, hey, we want to drive a lot of awareness. That might have been an outcome. Or your other outcome might have been, hey, we need a lot of people to convert. That would have been the outcome. But as I said earlier, I really think that your real opportunity is in that middle part. So that consideration phase, or that retention phase, or that advocacy phase. So if you were to break that down and look at a customer life cycle that went down the y-axis of awareness, consideration, purchase, retention, and advocacy, and then across the x-axis, you were to map out 20 different things that you could do online to get in front of somebody, either online or offline. So Google, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, email, Instagram, PR, direct mail, newspaper, whatever it is you wanted to do. For example, you could say that from an execution standpoint of content, our outcome is to drive awareness. Or from an execution standpoint of Facebook ads, our outcome is really to drive more consideration for our product. Or from an execution standpoint, we're going to run AdWords. But the outcome of AdWords campaigns is to drive purchase. And the outcome of running Facebook ads is to drive consideration. Or the outcome of running content and creating content is to drive more awareness. When you start looking at it that way, so what is the outcome of creating this content on this platform? It becomes a lot more of a strategy rather than, hey, than a tactic of we're just going to use X channel because it's available to us. So from this standpoint, we are going to use Facebook to drive our awareness, and we're going to use Facebook to also drive some consideration. But when it comes to purchase, we are expecting people to go to Google, do a search, because Google is great for a direct response, type in a keyword search term, and then drive them to a page to actually convert. From a retention standpoint, we're going to follow back up with emails, and then we're going to drive more advocacy, so getting people to share our love and talk to their friends and family about our products through YouTube and email. And then we also want to get more advocacy out through third parties, and we're going to use public relations to do that. You could create this framework, and for every client, this framework would be different. But the takeaway is tying an outcome to an execution, and that every channel is different based on what outcome you want people to actually accomplish. So when you start to break that down even further, I think it comes down to strategic scaling. And one of the biggest things I think that is missing or opportunities for improvement is around identifying available audiences. So there's the difference between creating a product and then having having an audience is actually looking for your product. And I think we all are aware of keyword research, and we can't go out and create demand for our products. So going out and finding at the brand or category level, how much keyword volume is there for keyword XYZ? And then starting with what's that total universe, scaling that down to what's our available universe. So what are those keyword searches that people are actually doing that would actually convert to someone making a product or making a purchase, sorry, and then driving that down to prospects, leads, and conversions. So total universe, you know, there's 7 billion people in the world, 360 million people in the United States. Of those, how many are actual prospects? Of those, how many would be leads? Of those, how many actually be conversions? So taking that information, cross-referencing that with how many people would be available on these channels, how many people would be available at each step of that path from awareness to advocacy, then going through and doing an audit of where are you as the company on that path. So what's your share of voice? Where are you on those search results? How much reach do you have? And then putting that in some sort of gap analysis. So where's your opportunity? How much digital real estate do you have? You know, if there's 20 search results for or 10 places you could be on a Google search result for that term between paid, local listings, and organic. You have 4 of them or 5 of them. There's 20 of those listings. You know, you have 25% of the page. Where's your gap analysis for that? And then focus on the opportunity within the sales funnel between the total available universe and the conversions. Where I think the biggest opportunity is really focusing on the number of prospects, and then how much of those prospects can you turn into leads. And as Chip referenced earlier, it was about micro moments. But micro moments are great, and it's, you know, the I want to know moments, I want to buy moments, I want to go moments, I need to learn more moments. But where micro moments really start to make sense is their intersecting point. And where micro moments, and for you as the company or you as the brand, it's that intersection of context, intent, and immediacy. And so where you can place your content or you can put your brand at that intersection of intent, so what they're searching for, immediacy of being there when they're doing that search, and then context of solving people's problems or being there between the top of the funnel and conversion, that is the intersection of a micro moment. So turning that into a methodology that scales and a methodology that's pragmatic and something that you can start to implement, your standard methodology would be to do your keyword research and look for your brand and category terms and put some, pre-search terms in there like looking to buy or ER near me or purchase of or reviews for. And then you would go and select your platform, and then you would execute your campaign, and then you would look at the bottom of your funnel conversion, and then you would do some optimization, and then you would go back and improve your keywords. You would look at your website, you would look at your Google Analytics, and then you would repeat. And then you would just try and optimize at the top of the funnel and at the bottom of the funnel, and you would just keep trying to see what you could do there. At the same time, you'd be missing that middle part. On the new way, between audience and amplification, you would be looking at those intersection points of a customer lifecycle stage. And you would start to be looking at audience segments tied to conversion metrics, and you would start to be seeing, how can I intersect at those sort of Google micro moments of context and influence and intersect there to solve their problems. So you might want to connect some, connect principles of influence, or you might want to assign an archetype for your consumer, and you would start to create a persona around them. And then after you did that, then you would go through and select a platform, and then you would execute a campaign, and then you would look at the bottom of the funnel conversion optimization. And then you could go back and improve your keywords and your websites, and then you could go back and repeat. So giving people what they want isn't nearly as powerful as teaching people what they need. And doing this methodology, the audience and amplification, this is journey path. And at the top, the standard, that's the transactional way of getting people from awareness to advocacy. So finding the gaps. And if I was to look at this from the how do you move this forward and where do these opportunities make sense, when we have instilled this methodology, we as in Rogue, whether it's with a healthcare company, a mortgage loan company, education, real estate, when we do this methodology and we we slow down before we speed up, when we try and uncover, when we look at these different layers, and when we look at that, that magic in the gray between top of the funnel and conversion, that it really does uncover, CRM opportunities for their process improvements. It finds internal controls. It finds greater efficiencies. It finds opportunities for new platforms, for sales process improvements. It also does more than that with our clients. It finds channel opportunities. So, on that consideration phase, we're able to uncover, hey, TV might be actually a good spot for you, or email, you're missing out on opportunities, or direct mail or other traditional methods might actually be a good fit for you. And then on the online side, it leads to deeper cookie pulls. It leads to more modeling opportunities for lookalike audiences. It allows for greater investments in targeting software. It allows us to be smarter with deeper levels of analytics, and it allows us to have more tools outside of things like Google Analytics so we can make more data-driven decisions to to help make and move these clients forward?
So we'd like to end where we started. Everything that we've been talking about and thinking about these opportunities in a slightly different way, it's a lot of work. And we would argue that it's worth the trouble, though. And some of the reasons that we want to argue that is from the where we started. We are looking for opportunities to become sticky and valuable and expand our piece of the universe. And so if we look at real impact and the way that we've been able to show this and demonstrate this in real life, the kinds of things that we have been able to unpack and that we would advocate that you look for as well, you'll start to see your conversation shift from where they may be right now to an idea of, what do you think we should do? You start to develop that trust, and they start wondering what you think about things. You become that strategic advisor role. And at the end of the day, you are indispensable. They don't want to let, when they can see their target audience growing and they can see it building and engagement improving, that is something that becomes indispensable to them. And then as James was talking about earlier, and he talked about that audience and testing it and validating it, there's the opportunity to take that information and to scale it infinitely. Ultimately, it also leads to increased media spend and retainers. And I think as practitioners and marketing experts and professionals in this space, that is obviously something that we're always looking to uncover. As we end our session, we thought it'd be good to show you a couple of different case studies, and we're not going to go into these exhaustively by any stretch, but we have alluded to a residential company that we work with. We talked about how they gain their leads through social, and you can imagine you've probably driven along the interstate or along the side roads, and you see these signs in the intersections that say buy a house and those kinds of things. That type of a company, that's the type of company we're helping to find their leads and ultimately convert people actually purchasing homes through social channels, and that's the work that we're doing for them. You imagine very minimal spends to achieve the kinds of conversions that you see here. This is a snapshot, a point in time, and actually this is fairly old data. This is probably from the January timeframe. And what's interesting to point out here is a couple of things. You can see that there are lots of sessions, and you can see their mobile traffic is high. You can see that users are doubling. I want you to pay attention to that box that says 7% increase in Spanish and 6% decrease in English. One of the targeting metrics that we uncovered and that we learned as we went through the process that we just explained to you is that they weren't just looking for individuals that were Hispanic. We were looking for individuals that spoke Spanish dominantly, that set their Google parameters to Spanish dominant. And what we started to see when we knew what was getting right was we started to see a higher level of Spanish speakers and a lower level of English speakers. Again, this is a snapshot in time, and that has only continued to increase and English to decrease, whereby they're actually selling more homes than even here at the beginning of the year. Another box I think is interesting here is that two houses were actually sold through social channels in less than 45 days. And one of the beautiful things that we were able to talk about with the client is this idea that their annual agency fee, so their return on investment, was recouped within their first 45 days of the campaign. And of course, that is their annual agency fee. So within just a few days, within less than 2 months, we were able to show them how spending what they spend with us for the entire year was a fantastic return on investment. And again, you know, here we are almost the beginning of June, and you know, we've sold more houses for them. So their ROI has only improved. Another one we'd like to share with you, again, not exhaustively, but you know, this is a healthcare system that we also alluded to slightly earlier. Clients think a lot, or think they care a lot about clicks and reach and likes, but at the end of the day, what they really care about is conversion. And so this is a high-end healthcare system. This particular healthcare system didn't accept insurance, so you can't just, you're not looking to go there if you're just trying to stay within your network or anything along that line. So you can imagine what the targeting might look like. You can also see, you know, the number of calls and the conversions and the amount of people interacting with the different channels that we have. I want you to also look and just notice all the mobile traffic and the video views. You can see that we had multiple points of messaging and content to engage users at various steps of the cycle, so trying to put that into practice. We certainly built keyword-driven segmented landing pages. We were able to show assisted conversions up by 50%. And one of the best things that we can share under the minimizing risk button or a segment is when you find the right audience, you're able to, so, you know, think about the kinds of things that they're doing, the attributes that matter to them, the places that they're going. By finding the right audience, we were able to reduce cost per click by more than 30% and then cost per acquisition by 50%. While also achieving all of these metrics. So it's one thing to just lower your costs and say that you're spending things in a more effective manner. It's another when you can show like that earlier slide that we did where it said in January we were seeing X number of thousands of users and, you know, a few conversions, and you can see even less users but more conversions. That's the story that we have here as well with the healthcare system, and what that ultimately resulted in was that their money went further and they got a higher quality of lead, which of course is what you want when you're doing spine care and you're doing orthopedics and you're in these high-end health services. So I think that's where we would like to leave our presentation for the moment and open it back up to Casey and team for, I guess, facilitation of questions.
Guys, fantastic job, everyone. Really, really good job. Chip, James, thanks so much for your time today. We're going to go ahead and open it up for some questions. We do have a couple. Let me go ahead and get the ball rolling with one that I'm personally really interested in. You really kind of hit the nail on the head when you were talking about that quote about giving people what they want isn't nearly as powerful as teaching people what they need. And that's, I can't stress enough how important that is. And I know many of you on the call share my frustration when we're trying to get a client on board and getting them to focus on what the true bottom line considerations may be, but they're kind of lost in the trees, so to speak, with the forest. Can you both kind of speak a little bit more about that? Just expand upon that a little bit. I'm sure you have a really good story about a situation where you were confronted with one of these recent clients where they were absolutely convinced one thing was as it should be when you were able to show probably pretty easily that they needed to focus on another aspect completely. Is that something you could speak to real quick?
Sure, I'll give a very high level, and I'm sure Chip can give a more detailed version. But I think that magic in the gray area that I spoke to earlier is probably the most relevant. So I think a lot of clients focus on very high level, like we need a lot of leads, or we need a lot of impressions, or hey, why aren't we getting a lot of conversions? And one thing, like the real estate example, we always follow up with them on when they get conversions or they get a lot of calls. We always ask them, what are the type of calls you're getting, or what questions are they asking? Or so they run the Facebook ads, and I always ask them, hey, are the people calling from the Facebook ads, are they acting and sounding and asking the same questions as the people who come from your Facebook group? So are they, you know, are they Spanish dominant? Are they asking, do they sound the same? Just to make sure our targeting is the same. Because I'm not really interested in getting you 1,000 people calling that don't really make a lot of sense. I'd rather get you 100 that actually do make a lot of sense. And then
right.
The biggest thing I've found is that consideration phase. We have found a lot of value, and I think a lot of companies focus on awareness and purchase, and they don't focus a lot on being there to solve people's problems at the consideration phase. And mm-hmm. so we have been able to help clients drive people from consideration to purchase just by being there online in a Google search result, maybe middle of the funnel, or a awareness campaign on Facebook with an ad that leads to a landing page. Just by being there, I think that does help, and there's a lot of white space opportunity there.
Got it. That's very, very helpful, very helpful. You also talked a little bit about micro moments, and we linked over to some more information about Google with that, and that's a really fascinating concept, especially for myself, because I've been doing a lot of work and presentations recently with beacons, and beacons are really all about micro moments. You're trying to connect with the person at a specific time in the buying process when they're qualified and quantified in the right space to make a purchase. So when we're talking about that, tell me a little bit about kind of how hard it is or what you've done to be able to get more of that data and involvement from the clients. Because I know many of people on the call share my frustration with getting information from clients, getting them to fill out surveys, getting them to fill out intake documents. I'm sure you're aware of how impossible it is if I send a sheet to a client and ask them to write everything they want about know about the business so that we could start looking at blog content, I might get one page back with three paragraphs and that's it. So tell me a little bit about your end. How do you go about kind of pulling out these micro moments? Do you use a specific, is there some strategies you could share with our audience today about that? Because again, customers hate filling out forms.
I think it all gets down to having a real clarity of outcomes. And I think it's about helping any customer or any company that you might be serving, helping them understand that there are different perspectives that they're not taking into account. And I think that's ultimately where it is, because everybody feels like they have a really solid grasp of what is needed and what the reasonings might be that they're not achieving the outcomes that they're looking to achieve. So two things there. One, they may not have clarity around what their outcomes are. We were working with a client this week, and the questions are, are you looking for something long-term or short-term? Are you looking for creative or science? You know, these are very, very big questions, and their answer is yes. We're looking for it all. And to James's point earlier, we don't get to do it all. You have to focus, and you really have to understand what your clarity of outcomes are. And when you do that, you have that ability. Now, we do a lot of discovery sessions and workshops where we'll sit down with the clients and we ask them to bring in all those varying voices. And we sit with them and we do exercises and we'll ask questions, even like that customer journey one. That one actually comes out of a direct session that we might have, a real workshop. And we ask individuals about what that customer journey looks like. And everybody thinks that they've got their handle on it. And every one of them, when they present the gospel truth of what the customer journey looks like. What becomes very evident very quickly is that everybody's right, because they're all bringing a perspective that matters. But now what we need to do is we need to get to alignment around that. So just because everybody's right doesn't mean that we have enough money to handle it all. But what we can drive towards is clarity of outcomes, and we can drive towards clarity of alignment and making sure that everybody walks out of there aligned around what's most important along that customer journey, and have we addressed things and amplified content and information in the channels that are most appropriate for those places. And so I would maybe say clarity of outcomes, and then just helping everybody understand that their version of the truth is a micro moment of it into itself.
Mm-hmm. Sure, that makes perfect sense. You've talked a lot today about kind of a bigger concept idea, overreaching experiences, things of that like. Let's talk a little bit about, let's go a little smaller here. You mentioned some great tools in your presentation, specifically SurveyMonkey, Google Forms, CrowdVibe, very big importance of collecting competent survey data. Are there some best practices there? I know a lot of people on the call don't do surveys, or maybe they would like to get into surveys, and they'd like to enhance that practice a little bit. Is there a specific sweet spot in how many questions to put on, for example, a CrowdVibe survey or using SurveyMonkey? I'm sure you have some experience with that. What would be some good tactics you could give our audience today?
Well, I would certainly say keep it short. The shorter you can do, the better, because just like when you're checking out of a shopping cart or anything else, the less information that you are required to give, the more that people will impact it. So really know what you're looking for, really understand what the what is most useful to you, and I would say keep it short. Now, our longest survey has been 10 questions. And, we pay for those, and we make sure that we get good feedback, and, people feel more obligated to give good information when you pay them. So that's another best practice. If you're doing it for free, remember you get what you paid for. But at the same point in time, I think the shorter you can keep it while still achieving the outcomes that you're looking for, the better.
Great. And it looks like we've got a question over here from someone named King Philip. Maybe he could expand upon that a little bit, but his question is, how do I keep up with the constant change? Maybe he's referring to just the constant changes in the competitive analysis portion of your talk today, you know, the so many tools, so many strategies. Maybe you could speak generally to that with regards to the change component, as hopefully he'll be able to add a little bit more information during the wait.
I can speak to that. So I feel like we live in what a lot of people call like the knowledge-based economy. And mm-hmm. I feel to work in this industry, this is probably the academic side of me coming out, is that as we live in the knowledge-based economy, that you have to be a lifelong learner to be competitive and keep up in this world. And so whether that is having a, you know, a highly curated list of content sources that you continually keep up with, or blogs or podcasts or whatever it is that you listen to, that's how I think, you know, people say start. To that end, I think that we all listen to the same podcast and we all go to the same conferences and we all read the same blogs. So to that point, I feel like we're all going to end up sounding exactly the same. So with that said, I think that it is important that you start to find your own little nuances or your own ways of saying things. And I think people have choices every day in what they listen to or watch or read or what they do. So I think conferences are important. I think finding out the latest tools and hacks are really, really important. And I think, you know, listening to podcasts and webinars and white papers and whatever you can get your hands on, I think that is how you, I think that's how you stay ahead in this game.
Very true. And I would just add that, you know, when we're talking about there's, it's very easy, whether it's, you know, King Philip or anyone else on the call, to get lost with all the social networks that abound online today. I know that Twitter has really fallen out of favor as of late. It continues to struggle. Google Plus is really kind of a dead man walking in many aspects. I think the only takeaway we would take is that research your audience. Your audience may be on a very specific platform. Usually Facebook is a great place to start. It is by far the king of the mountain. There's, it's unquestionable there. You can do with the new Atlas ad system, the amount of finite demographic-based targeting you can do boggles the mind. But again, that could not be the case for a specific nuanced niche market that you're in. So researching that is very important. You know, on that note, you know, we've got, let me go ahead and do
audience
this.
Audience platform.
Mm-hmm. Please continue, Chip.
Two last things. Audience platform over popularity, I think, is very important. And I also think it's very important that people become niche in something. So, you know, I think it's important to be a meaningful specific over a wandering generality.
Very, very true. That is a great, great point. I think we're going to go ahead and end today on a couple takeaways. So if I could have you start, Chip, go ahead and give a couple. If you could just define everything you've spoken down to today, just a couple takeaways that you'd want our audience to remember, that would be great. And then we'll move right on to James real quick.
I think the most important thing that I could probably leave us with is that I think it's more important that we are all professionals and we all understand how to do our tactics and our things. I think what's more important is that if we really want to remain valuable and sticky and expand our piece of the universe, that we have to think more strategically and we have to be focused on generating strong outcomes and having that clarity of outcomes so that we know what it is we're ultimately trying to achieve. I think that's the most important thing. If we get that right, these other tactics and these things will work their way out.
James?
Yeah, sure. For me, I think the number one thing is to know our reality, that the number one problem that most companies and brands face is obscurity, that we're always in a race against time and capital, and that it's really, really important that we, you know, we focus on identifying our goals, and to that point that we're always tying goals to data and outcomes. I think that is probably the most important thing.
Fantastic. James, Chip, thank you so much for your time today with Rogue Marketing. Their presentation was Creating a Modern Framework for Audience Amplification. Please help me give a virtual round of applause to both of them for their time and efforts today. Really, really good stuff. For those of you who might be attending your first masterclass call, all of this information will be available within, very quickly, usually within 24 hours. so you can download and review the full PPT at your convenience. If you have any questions at all about this, make sure you visit the forums, ask a fast answer question, or interact with any of our presenters on Twitter. James, Chip, thanks so much. Great meeting you both. James, hopefully I'll see you again this year. Chip, hopefully I'll meet you in person for the first time.
Be great.
And that's it. That's it for the masterclass and me. Thanks, everyone. Take it easy.
Thanks, Casey.